Do you hear that? That is the sound of BMW performance without a single piston or cylinder. A generation of all-electric vehicles designed and built like no other. The BMW iX, i7, and i4 revolutionize every drive into a thrilling opportunity to feel the pure rush of BMW 100% electric. But isn't that what you'd expect from the ultimate electric driving machine? Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.
Well, isn't that true again this spring? Every time we think we know, we don't know. Wyndham Clark had never finished higher than 75th in a major before this weekend. And yet he is the U.S. Open champion from the L.A. Country Club. Just his second win on tour. He bogeys back-to-back holes to cough up what is a three-shot lead with four holes to go, making it precariously tight with Rory McIlroy right on his heels. But Rory can only par. Wyndham Clark becomes the fifth straight first-time winner of the U.S. Open. Pretty incredible story, because this is not a guy who's well-known or highly ranked. He'll be 30 later this year, so we're not talking about a young pup, if you will. And do you know, before he won the Wells Fargo, which was 5 weeks ago, so it would have been going back to May, and before he had this surge to win the U.S. Open, and actually he finished well at the Memorial as well, which is a part of a run-up to the U.S. Open, well, and the Masters, he was ranked 293rd in the world. 1 year ago, ranked 293 in the world ranking. So if you've never heard of Wyndham Clark, you are not alone. But he says, I feel like I belong on this stage. Even 2-3 years ago, when people didn't know who I was, I felt like I could still play and compete against the best in the world. I felt like I've shown that this year. And he's from Denver. So we've got champions all around, right, in Denver. Going from the Colorado Avalanche and the Stanley Cup in 22 to the Denver Nuggets in 23 to now Wyndham Clark, Denver native, winning the U.S. Open. Yeah, best major finish ever was tied for 75th. That's crazy. First time even making the cut at the U.S. Open. Never even made the cut before, and now he is a winner. It's awesome. We'll talk more about holding off Rory McIlroy and what happened with Ricky Fowler, but if you haven't heard the story from Wyndham Clark, it's pretty incredible. As he's out navigating the final round in L.A., and over the course of the weekend, with this tournament being at the L.A. Country Club, people are coming up to him and showing him photos of his mom. She used to live in LA, and you know how it is now, all access, and people get really comfortable doing their research, Wikipedia, and trying to figure out who people are. And so he believes that his mom was with him as he was navigating and climbing this mountain to his first major victory.
I know my mom's proud of me. She's always been proud of me, and regardless of how I'm doing or what I'm doing, you know, I just wish she could be here and we can enjoy this. It's been a pretty amazing week because my mom lived in LA for a few years, and I've had some people come up to me and show pictures of my mom when they knew her back in her 20s and early 30s when she was living here, and that just happened this week. So it was kind of a special vibe all week being here in LA. My parents got married at Riviera Country Club, and so I have some roots a little bit in this area, and all I really wish is that my mom could be here and I could just hug her and we could celebrate together. But I know she's proud of me, and yeah.
Very emotional for him, and he cried a bunch after he won, of course, for a variety of reasons. But the other part of his mom's story that he didn't mention, she competed in the Miss USA pageant. So she had some recognition there in LA. She was crowned Miss New Mexico. She competed in Miss USA. She lived in LA And she married a former pro tennis player. So his dad is a former pro tennis player. And he mentioned where their wedding was, just outside LA. When Wyndham's youngest sibling was born in the late 90s, his mom was diagnosed with breast cancer right after that. So his little brother was a baby, and his mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. She went through multiple rounds of chemo and radiation for a couple of years. And even as he was getting into college golf, so she's the one that introduced him to golf. He enrolled at Oklahoma State and he played there. But as he's doing that, as he's just seeing his college career and his golf career take off, his mom was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer, meaning it had spread throughout her body and there was nothing the doctors could do. You can understand the emotions, of course. And he had a bunch of family and friends who were there for him on the 18th when he hit the putt and clinched the U.S. Open. His mom died almost exactly 10 years ago. But she was his biggest supporter. And I know it was Father's Day this weekend, but parents, so instrumental, not just in loving us and caring for us and providing for us, but a lot of times introducing us to our passions. And I was reading this. I didn't know much about Wyndham Clark. I enjoyed hearing him talk about his mom, and it was really neat to see the photos that people were holding up. But as you can imagine, when his mom died, he's in college, his mom dies, and he went into a bit of a tailspin. It was a really difficult time for him. So he left Oklahoma State, which has got one of the best golf programs in the country, and he went to Oregon, and his coach helped him to dissect not just his game, but also to make him confident again that he could play and to play in his mom's memory. I saw this quote from Wyndham, which I want to share with you because, again, I know it was Father's Day, but parents, so important. I was a mama's boy, so there would be a lot of hugging and crying together, referring to him winning the U.S. Open. But I know she'd be very proud of me. I miss her, and it's obviously great to think about her. And being here in L.A. and winning something like this makes me think of her even more than maybe my day-to-day when I'm not playing a championship. Wyndham Clark, first-time major winner, first-time U.S. Open champion, first-time major contender. And his mom and her spirit, they were part of the whole thing. Pretty incredible story. And this is the reason I love sports, because behind every athlete and every outcome, there is a story. Some are euphoric. Some cause us to be ecstatic. Others are painful. Injuries, loss. Ultimately, athletes are people, just like the rest of us. They have incredible skills, valuable skills. Many of them can deal with pressure. They perform their best under pressure. You have to be able to do that to win at the highest level. They're incredibly committed and determined. They make a lot of sacrifices for their craft. But they're people. They feel pain and grief and loss, disappointment. I mean, think about Rory McIlroy. Now nearly 9 years without a major. What about Ricky Fowler? His entire career, he's come so close and has not been able to capitalize. These guys are feeling a lot of different emotions. But Sunday was Wyndham Clark's day. The U.S. Open was Wyndham Clark's tournament. And I love his story. And yeah, now more people know who he is. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. I'd love to hear from you. Your reaction to Ja, or maybe to the Bradley Beal trade that may happen soon or may take a few more days, depending on what's going on with Chris Paul. He's struggled with injuries the last couple of years. He's had some surgeries. Only played 90 games in the past two seasons. And remember, one full season is 82. So he's essentially played half of each of the last two seasons. He's 29 years old, same age as Wyndham Clark. Will turn 30 before the next season tips off. Maybe a little less pounding on his body the last couple years will mean that he's got fresher legs, but of course he's got different nagging injuries that he's had to deal with. A lot of money still on the table for him. Over $200 million still due on his contract. The Suns are going all in again after they went all in before. Now they're really going all in again. So you can react to either of those storylines. We'll get back to some baseball as well. The Texas Rangers trying to get back on track. Shohei Ohtani. Maybe inspiring Mike Trout. Does Trout even need that? The Giants from San Francisco are one of the hottest teams in baseball. And it always feels better if it's against the Dodgers. For the Giants, it always feels better against the arch rival. Also, what's wrong with the Dodgers? They surged at the top of the NL West and now they're fading back. Not in first and not in second. So a little more baseball on the horizon. But I want to be sure to say a few words, a couple of minutes here on the latest with Bob Huggins. Maybe you heard that he was arrested Friday night for driving under the influence of alcohol. Pretty scary, some of the details that have come out from the police report about his arrest and about how intoxicated he was when he was behind the wheel. Matt Norlander is a college basketball insider for CBS Sports. We've had him on the show multiple times. He gives some of those details and really says, Coach needs some help.
He needs to seek help. He needs to get himself right. All right. This is not a one-off, literally his second DUI. And for him to have put himself in this situation is genuinely terrifying to think about when you consider the fact that he was asked by police on the scene Friday night in Pittsburgh where he was. He could not tell them the city that he was in. He even guessed Columbus, as in Columbus, Ohio, which is almost a 3-hour drive west of where he actually was. He had been to a Burger King 7 hours prior and could not tell the police what he had done in between in those 7 hours. We're talking about a man whose blood alcohol content was 0.210. That is severe enough to put some humans in the hospital. Bob Huggins is extremely lucky that he did not hurt himself or others or potentially kill himself or others. This is an extremely serious situation. There was no choice but this. And so now we have to hope that Huggins, because of this, can actually level himself, seek whatever help and treatment he may need to better his life and not put himself or anyone in this kind of position again. West Virginia had no choice. He is resigning. And in all likelihood, with the retirement I'm told that's looming, has coached his final game.
Matt Norlander of CBS Sports. I try hard to have compassion and in some cases empathy where I can relate. In this case, I cannot. I had a very close friend who was killed by a drunk driver a few years ago. I'm sure many of you can say the same. And as much as I understand what Matt is saying, I do not like the use of the word lucky in that context. He's lucky he didn't hit someone, kill someone. Really, is it unlucky then? The Raiders wide receiver a couple of years, was it two seasons ago? Who was completely intoxicated, racing his vehicle, slammed into the back of another car and killed a young woman and her dog in the most painful way. She was burned alive. Is that unlucky then? And again, I'm not jumping on Matt, but this is not a matter of luck. Bob Huggins was arrested Friday in Pittsburgh because, now get the time, 8:30 in the evening. We're not talking about 2 o'clock in the morning. We're not talking about middle of the night. We're talking about 8:30 in the evening. Police noticed that there is a black SUV that's blocking traffic. The driver's side door is open. One of the tires is shredded. And the officers told him to move his vehicle off the road. So they actually gave him a chance, maybe initially not knowing that he was intoxicated. So they get close enough. He's in the vehicle. Driver's side door is open. He didn't get out or hadn't gotten out at that point. They tell him to move his car off the road. But he can't even get the car off the road without driving erratically. He's having trouble driving the SUV. As you hear Matt report, he can't tell them where he is. They observe him to be drunk, and so they ask him to do field sobriety tests. He fails. And they do a breathalyzer, and his BAC, his blood alcohol content, is 0.21. That's more than twice the legal limit. But also, had he not been such a huge dude, and clearly he's got a tolerance built up, he might have passed out. You may remember that 6 weeks ago, Bob Huggins was on a Cincinnati radio station. Remember, he used to coach there. And he did an interview with a host, and he used an anti-gay slur. And I said at the time, I thought he should be fired. Instead, it was a 3-game suspension, a no-tolerance policy, and he lost $1 million in salary then. I'm actually stunned that they allowed him to resign as opposed to firing his ass. If it's me and I'm the athletic director, I'd want to make the statement, you're out. You're done. And I don't believe he should coach again. Now, Rick Pitino's still coaching. So a lot of times your past transgressions don't necessarily doom your future. But I hope no one else gives him a chance anytime soon. He clearly needs help, as Matt points out. But also, he could have killed himself or someone else. More poignantly, he could have killed someone else, like Henry Ruggins did. This is despicable. And I get it when you are intoxicated, impaired, whether it's alcohol or something else. You don't make good choices. But it's 8:30 in the evening. He obviously knew he was drinking. Whether he planned to get smashed or not, he knew he was drinking. He's rich. The man is rich. Call a damn ride home. I don't have any sympathy or compassion, really. I hope he gets the help. If you want to be a drunk, be a drunk. Don't get behind the wheel. And I just see no excuses for public figures. Or forget public figures. Although he had no room to mess up again. But I see no room for celebrities, the rich. I really don't even see room when we're talking about poor people or people who don't have a lot of money. But it just blows me away that athletes and coaches get into these situations when they have every available resource to get home. It's not like it's the first time it happened. It had happened in his past. Certainly, Bob Huggins, a lot of arrogance there. You can hear it. We know it. Just happens to be a really good basketball coach. And so he's gotten multiple opportunities and more grace and mercy extended to him than the average American would probably have. But this is gross. I don't know what happens in terms of the legal responsibility. But I'm glad that he's no longer coaching. And yeah, if it's me and I'm in leadership, my only stipulation would be, no, you don't get to resign. We're firing you. But there was a zero tolerance policy. So either way, he was not going to survive this and shouldn't. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and our Facebook page as well. Even though it is a federal holiday, I still have to write my CBS Sports Minute and record it. Trying to think what else I want to do here. I have other things I want to do. I did mention baseball, so let's do baseball next, and we'll get to some other stuff at the back of the hour. But Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, the Angels, they're surging. Trade deadline for Major League Baseball is, it's like 6 weeks away. 6 weeks away. Will the Angels keep him? If they keep winning, they definitely will. Meaning for the rest of this year. He gets to decide at the end of this season. But they would have to decide about whether or not to trade him if they're just treading water. And I want to see the Angels back in the playoffs. But I also want to see Shohei on that stage. He and Mike Trout, could you imagine?
It took CD Rates 15 years to get this good. It will only take 15 seconds to find the best rates for you. Visit CDValet.com to get the straight up rates, all compiled in one place. CD Valet, the straight up rates.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Shohei swings at this one, blasts the ball deep out into right center field. It is out of here. Ohtani connects a two-run homer right there. And the Angels have the lead. It's 3-2. And on this Father's Day, it is showtime. Here's Trout swinging and hitting a ball high and deep out into left center. And it's Trout here. Back-to-back homers on back-to-back pitches. And the Angels have a 4-2 lead. Mike Trout is back.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Not only is Mike Trout back, but Ohtani remains on fire. 24th home run of the season for Shohei, 58 RBI. Now that's Terry Smith on the Angels radio network. So, yeah, the Angels are playing their best baseball. They're living their best lives right now. They went 5-2 on the road trip, and Trout is thrilled with the fact that he's got Ohtani in front of him, of course, but also about their wins that they're amassing right now.
It means we're in a good spot offensively. It's cool walking, into the dugout and Shohei handing me the hat. So, but that was pretty cool. But it's good. Just to come in here, off that big series in Texas, and then losing one last night, a tough one. They came back and had some good at bats, but to come in here the next day and turn a page and just get a W was big. It was a good road trip.
The Angels have actually won 11 of 14 now and are putting some pressure on the Rangers at the top of the AOS. We'll get to that. Trout had his 15th home run, also had his 13th double in this game, and he's at 39 home runs. So you've got Ohtani at 58, Trout at 39. It reminds me a little bit of it reminds me of the duo with the Edmonton Oilers. Okay, so what did we see from Connor McDavid and from Leon Draisaitl this year? Both over 100 points, two of the best scorers in the league. Trout's gone through a bit of a slump, but the two have the potential. They have the potential to be that kind of a punch. And they have that crazy helmet that they pass back and forth. So Ohtani hits in the two spot, Trout in the three spot, and it was productive on Sunday. And Tyler Anderson, I like this perspective because he watches these guys day in and day out. He says that Shohei's success and Shohei's approach is actually kind of dragging Trout back to the land of the living, if you will, in baseball.
In the dugout, you can see like the things he's doing. You're like, oh man, he's about to get there. And just to see, I felt like that probably lifted a weight for him too. And Shohei's just been killing the ball. And, for us to be able to play really well and have guys that are going to be that good struggle, sometimes it's going to happen.
Tyler Anderson picks up his fourth win on the season. And as I say, the Angels are among the hottest teams in baseball. Now 4.5 back in the AL West. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. The Rangers desperately seeking a win on Sunday.
Now the 2-2. Swing and a drive deep right field. Springer going back, getting turned around. He watches with the rest of us. It's out of here. Jonah Heim with a solo blast to lead off the fifth. He ties the score in six. The 3-1. That ball is hit sharply up the middle. Diving Merrifield. He can't get it. It's by him and in the center. Garver comes in to score. Duran makes it to third. Leody Taveras with the RBI single to give the Rangers their first lead of the day at 7-6.
3-2. One out. Pitch. Taveras swings, and that one is driven to right center. Springer back. Bullpen shot. Out of here. Two-run home run for Leody Taveras, and the Rangers lead 10-7.
On Rangers radio, they get three runs in the fourth, three runs in the fifth, three runs in the seventh, and that'll help. Desperately needing a win, as I say, because they had lost three in a row. Then they beat the Angels, so they lost two of three to the Angels, but they'd lost three or four in a row. Then beat the Angels in one, but then lost another one. So they were scuffling a bit too. And every team goes through this, certainly over the course of a 162 game schedule, you're going to see teams rise and fall. But the Rangers, they want to protect their real estate, and they can see and feel and maybe hear the Angels' wings behind them. So yeah, they desperately needed the offense to light a fire, to find some fire, whichever cliche you want.
Being who they are, sticking with the plan, you know, you get in a little rut, and I'll say rut because, you know, we had a good streak there, you know, without getting hit with runners in scoring position. But they showed good discipline at home plate. You lose the first game of the series, come back and win the next two ticket series after losing the first series at home. Now, it's big for this club before you hit the road.
Bruce Bochy, to me, is a manager who can make an immediate impact. And we had talked about this last week as part of one of our show questions, coaches and managers who can make an immediate impact just by stepping on the property because of their equity, their credibility, their experience, of course, but also because the respect that they have around their sport. And I truly believe it's one big reason why the Rangers are seeing a lot of these pieces fall into place. Now, not all of them. Jacob DeGrom is a highly paid free agent, a high-priced free agent that they signed, and he's made, what, three or four starts and just had the Tommy John surgery, though I did see that right now he's into his rehab, and so there's some optimism there that he's at least got the surgery behind him. But for Bruce Bochy and the Rangers, they're still protecting that lead atop the AL West. Now 4.5 over the Angels, who leapfrogged the Astros in the past week. That's, to me, one of the cool stories of the baseball season to this point. And we've got, let's see, there's about 70, 71 games that have been played. So they're not yet to the midway point, but they're getting close. The All-Star break is not actually the midway point. The All-Star break is into the second half. Long way to go. A long way to go. We're just getting to the point now where it's the boys of summer. And so they aren't, no one's in a stretch run. No one should be scoreboard watching except for us here in the CBS Sports Radio studios. But one more, while we're talking about teams that are hot on the West Coast, this in Los Angeles over the weekend, the Giants more than happy to pile on the Dodgers.
Yeah, as pulls one into right field, that is a hit. Coming to third is Jock. They're going to send him. Hayward up with the ball. Here comes his throw. The slide, and Jock is safe at home plate. The ball ricochets away. Gonsolin picks it up and throws to second. Yastrzemski will slide in safely ahead of the tag of Mookie Betts. The pitch. Matos pulls it down the left field line. That is a fair ball. Headed into the corner. Conforto will score. Here comes Yastrzemski. He'll score into second. Matos with a double.
That's the call on Giants radio as they're able to push around the Dodgers yet again, really kind of beat up on them. They were bullies to the Dodgers this weekend. Oh, my goodness. So they end up winning their seventh in a row. And I'm not sure if you saw the score or any of the game on Saturday. The Dodgers were like the Bad News Bears, 15-0. They got shellacked at home by the Giants. So they lose this weekend series. The Giants get this sweep of the Dodgers in LA. And they do it by scoring 29 runs to just 8 for LA.
Wow.
Yeah, no doubt. This is a rivalry that goes way back and one that's been pretty spicy in recent years, though the Dodgers have generally gotten the best of the Giants. Remember, was it 2 years ago where they had, what, 104 and 105 wins, and the Giants edged out the Dodgers for the division crown, but then the Dodgers end up eliminating the Giants in the playoffs, right? Oh, gosh, that night, was it a Chris Taylor walk-off, if I remember correctly? Oh, my gosh, in game five, right? Anyway, they are bitter rivals, and you can imagine it feels real good for them to be able to sweep LA on their own field.
I just thought we did a really good job, played a lot of good baseball, and the boys were swinging it throughout. So, I mean, that's always fun as a pitcher to see that. So, yeah, just thought we played really good baseball. Keep it going.
Yeah, Logan Webb would love to see them continue down this path here as they've won their seven straight. As for the Dodgers, well, they were, they had a quick stint atop the NL West. Diamondbacks overtook them by actually playing the Dodgers really well, too. Kind of makes me think of the NFC North and the Green Bay Packers. The last couple seasons, well, really last year specifically, how many times did we see other teams go into Green Bay and beat the Packers and grudgingly earn the respect? Well, if you can go into LA and you can win games against the Dodgers, it's a big deal, right? And so thinking about kind of the, it's been a slower slide for them until recently, where they're just not able to find a foothold and kind of stop their sliding down the mountain, if you will. They've dropped five of their last seven, and if you go back even farther, they had a four-game losing skid. I think it was maybe early June, late May. So they're really struggling right now. And Dave Roberts, it's his job with guys who've got World Series resume on or World Series credentials on their resume to be able to figure this out.
Obviously, when you're not winning games, things get more magnified, and understandably so. I think if you look back at this two-week stretch, there's a lot of things that we're just not doing well, and we're not playing clean baseball, fundamental baseball, and I think it's going back to, you know, not just trying to win, but focus on the little things, catching the baseball, you know, minimize walks, throwing to the right base, you know, not getting thrown out on the bases, you know, executing a pickoff play. Those are things that are coming back to haunt us. And typically we're much better at that. And, you know, this last couple weeks, we haven't been good. And those are the things that we have to clean up.
Dave Roberts, longtime manager of the Dodgers. They do have a lot of veteran pieces, again, with championship credentials. And there's still plenty of games left to go. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the Dodgers surge. They've been a second half team. Last year they definitely were, but right now they're four back and only six games above 500, which is interesting. So a lot happening in baseball. I told you earlier last week, or I guess right after Hoops and Hockey wrapped up. Okay, baseball, you've got our attention. I wouldn't say our full attention, but you've got our attention. Wyndham Clark grabbed some of the stories this weekend, being a great Cinderella from golf. It's kind of fun to use that term in a different sport, isn't it? All right. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. There was a celebration, if you will, in Vegas. I think celebration doesn't even do it justice. It was a party on the Strip for the Golden Knights, first-time winners of the Stanley Cup. This is on the heels of Mike Malone and Nikola Jokic. I do that a bunch. Nikola Jokic stealing the show for the Nuggets in Denver and their championship parade. What did we get from the Golden Knights?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The noble charge from Bill Foley was cut in six. They talk about dreaming. The Golden Knights are going to make that dream a reality. A devotion to destiny. Misfits to champions. The Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup in 2023. The first Stanley Cup championship in Golden Knights history. comes in their sixth season. The Silver State is home to the greatest silver trophy in all of sports.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network is their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. And I know some of you lament how the expansion draft went and the fact that it was only six seasons, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. For these guys, it's not six seasons, right? They had to come together and in a way, the way that they did it, but in a way that they were constantly dealing with a revolving door. The roster, as well as the coaching staff, only six of the originals remain. They're called the original misfits, and everything else around them changed. So yes, it was only six seasons for them to wait until they get their first ever Stanley Cup. But a lot of these players themselves waited longer and worked harder than what the six seasons would belie. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. They had their party on the Strip Saturday night. They actually closed down the Strip. Now, we had talked to, was it Danny Webster from the Las Vegas Sun late last week, just to kind of wrap up the season with a black and gold bow. And what he said is that it's very rare for them to close down the Vegas Strip, but they did it for a party. And he also said that as a Vegas native, what he loves about the Golden Knights is that they started there. They weren't moved from somewhere else. And so the fans really embraced them as the first pro sports team, major pro sports team to land in Vegas. They were an expansion, so they belong to Vegas and Vegas only, at least for now. And so it was pretty cool too. We'll start with some that's not quite so crazy. But Mark Stone, as the captain, speaking to the fans once they rallied.
I think as a whole, we thank you guys for, you know, being the best fans in the world. Doesn't get any better than this, man. On Tuesday night when we were rolling, I think it brought tears to the guys' eyes and on the bench. We knew we were going to win no matter what it took. You know, we're the ones up here celebrating this Stanley Cup, but the crowd, the building that we have every night, not just in the playoffs, but in the regular season, you know, you guys bring it. You bring it every night. Makes it special for us. Really does.
Listen to that noise. Oh, yeah. And Bruce Cassidy, who was the first-time coach in Vegas, right? So had coached in Boston, had been unceremoniously dumped by the Bruins and was available to the Golden Knights. So first year, he told us, or told the media, that he didn't know the owner, Bill Foley, had promised a Stanley Cup in six seasons until after he had signed the contract.
Here we go. Back to back, 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 back to back.
At least it's not run it back.
Run it back! Yeah. Run it back!
Or what did Mike Malone tell us? We're going to run that bleep back. Yeah, I'm over the run it back. That's a phrase that I hope I never have to hear again in sports. I'm kind of done with it.
We're getting another one, and I'm out.
What do you say? Because I'm a greedy bastard.
We're some greedy bastards, baby. We're some greedy bastards.
Oh, not just him. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, the fans getting a lot of love from the Vegas Golden Knights. And William Karlsson, as much as he could be coherent, was trying to do the same.
You have been here day one. We played Arizona in the first game, and we beat the shit out of them. Year one, I was pretty great.
Wait, so he goes back to year one and their very first game against Arizona? Because I was thinking about, I'm like, wait a minute, they didn't play Arizona in the postseason. So
first game is a Golden Knight.
First game is a Golden Knight, and we beat the bleep out of them. That was his memory there.
And we beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Year one, I was pretty great.
That was so great. That was the start of something special. He tried, by the way, to congratulate Jonathan Marchessault, who ends up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy as the playoff MVP. He tried.
We've been up and down.
Come back!
On this journey to the cup.
Pass it to Marshy. Marshy, you got something to say?
No, 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 no. Listen to me. We've been waiting for 6 long years for this guy to be MVP! Jonathan Marchessault.
He didn't know what to do with the mic. Jonathan!
Jonathan Marchessault.
William Karlsson was a bit of a mess, but it maybe he knew what to do with his hands, which is more than what we can say for goalie Aiden Hill.
What does it mean to bring this city its first Stanley Cup?
It's pretty wild. I don't know. I don't know what to do with my hands right now.
Okay. Why? Why would you admit that on a TV interview or radio interview? Funny. Well, good. They earned the right to let it all hang out, let it all hang loose. I really hope nobody was hit by a flying beer can. Didn't that happen to Nikola Jokic's wife in the Denver Nuggets ticket tape parade? You can't act like you've been there, done that when you haven't. So good for you, Denver and Vegas. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of BMW performance without a single piston or cylinder. A generation of all-electric vehicles designed and built like no other. The BMW iX, i7, and i4 revolutionize every drive into a thrilling opportunity to feel the pure rush of BMW 100% electric. But isn't that what you'd expect from the ultimate electric driving machine? Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.